Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good Friday morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Ooh, TGIF. Anyway, thank you for being with us today. So, it is the first Friday of the month, and you know, as usual, we got to talk about all things money, money, money with the country here, and the we're talking about the economy with Paul Z. Shelton, Jr. of Warwickshire. Good morning. How you doing?
I am doing well. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I am blessed. I am taking one day at a time, so... So what's going on, sir? Tell us what's happening. You know, I guess the first thing I want to go ahead and get out of the way, because I want to talk about some other things, is the JOB, the jobs report. So can you enlighten us, sir, please?
Yes, yes, yes. As we always know, and as I say every month, my favorite indicator, my favorite economic indicator is the unemployment report, and that was released today. And it showed a positive gain, something that was unexpected. So we did have 916,000 new non-farm payroll jobs that were added to the economy in the month of March. The unemployment rate edged down to 6%, and these improvements in the labor market reflect the continued resumption of economic activity that has been curtailed, you know, by the coronavirus pandemic. Job growth was widespread in the month of March, which is pretty good. Some of the leads that took the, I guess, the largest gains in jobs added to our economy were in leisure and hospitality. You know, so that is something that is very near and dear to those in the Central Florida market and those in those areas around the country that are, you know, rely a lot on tourism, leisure, hospitality, the restaurant industry, and things of that nature. So we're starting to see a pickup and a significant rebound in those jobs that are coming online. Additionally, we saw a rise in the public and private sector education jobs and in construction. There was a nice sizable increase in the amount of construction jobs that were added to the economy in the month of March. So all in all, when you look at this jobs report, it is very, very positive. And if we continue to see growth in the employment picture like this, you know, this is really a good mark, close to 1 million jobs added in the economy over the month of March. If we continue to see this over the next 6 to 7 months, we'll be looking at an economy that has fully recovered all of the jobs that were lost as a result of the pandemic in an economy that will more than likely be running at full octane when it comes to our economic measurements.
Well, that's good to hear. And so where has the biggest growth been? I guess what I want to know is maybe should people consider changing careers? Because I'm thinking that a lot of the growth has taken place in the pharma industry, biomedicine, you know, that type of stuff.
Correct. So we're seeing growth and we're seeing that in those industries, there's really two things that are really taking place in our economy as of right now. One, we're seeing a structural change in how our employment landscape looks, and that's being driven by, you know, many companies choosing and not choosing to go back to having a brick and mortar location for many of the office jobs that could be done remotely. Next thing we're seeing is somewhat of a shift in consumer preference when it comes to buying goods and exchanging, you know, goods for services. So those shifts continue to play out. We know the preamble to all of this was the retail apocalypse that we talked about that has played out over the last few years. But additionally, I think we're the biggest gains that we're going to see will be in people finding employment that has flexibility. So, and that could be across different sectors, and it could be in different ways across different sectors. So, for example, telemedicine has really skyrocketed now as opposed to 5 years ago. There are more people that have an appetite to do routine checkups, just those routine doctor visits via Zoom today, as opposed to the way it's been over the last. So we're starting to see an increase in more services that are going to be offered in that capacity. That will sort of change the landscape a little bit. Doctors may not have to require to have the large amount of equipment, millions of dollars of equipment in their offices as much. A lot of that information may be outsourced to a third-party company. That was something that was already taking place in the insurance industry. When you file for an insurance policy, you'll have someone come to your home or meet you at work, and they'll take your vital statistics, and then they'll send that off to a LabCorp or another company, and they'll run all the statistics for you, send that to the doctor, then they'll read the and give you the results from there. So we may shift to more a model, business model that looks like that in the intermediate term, but we're definitely seeing that change in growth in that in those particular sectors.
I know it's affected a change in the real estate industry in the sense that people who were looking a lot now before for, you know, open concept, and that's still a desirable thing for a lot of people, but because people have to work from home now, they're looking for a place to get away and actually do work in an office somewhere. So, you know, having a home office is quite essential right about now, and spaces for, I guess, everybody who worked, for the kids to do homework, for the adults to do work from home. So That has affected how people are looking at the structure of their houses now, too.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And I think that's going to continue to play out. And it may not necessarily be a negative thing for the economy in total. So one of the things that we realized in throughout this pandemic is that women were forced to leave their jobs disproportionately as opposed to men. Many women left the workforce to stay home with the kids, to educate the kids, and really, you know, be that foundation through the pandemic, if we could paint it in that way. A lot of these women are able to return to work, but possibly not at the full capacity. And they may have the luxury, since it's been over the last year, of I enjoy staying home, being able to do some of these responsibilities with the kids, get things done during the day, and at the same time, how can I find a job that can, you know, adequately, you know, pay me and still be able to take advantage of this flexibility? And I think as we continue to see our economy shift to this new business model, that will be a very good potential for those that stay home, you know, to be able to have that gainful employment, re-enter the workforce, have solid income, and still be able to have the flexibility that they need.
Now, has that also possibly contributed to an increase in women-owned businesses because of maybe some of the inflexibility that may still be out there for them?
I think that the entrepreneurial spirit is strong right now in our environment, and we're seeing a lot of people striking out to become entrepreneurs, starting their own businesses, and realizing that, hey, if I'm working at home or if I have to work at home, it's very possible that I can do this instead of working for someone else, but do it on my own. So it is possible. I don't know the exact statistics are, if that's even measured at this point today based on the pandemic, but I believe that it is very, very possible that that could be a catalyst to lead more women into entrepreneurship.
Yeah. It's interesting to me how we're still dealing with that dynamic. I remember one of the things that I looked at when I got married and was just kind of looking down the road, and one of the reasons I got into real estate was to have the flexibility of schedule in case, you know, down the road we were going to have kids, you know, that someone was going to have to pick up the child from school in an emergency. I also even debated the possibility of homeschooling, depending on the quality of the, you know, educational institution I wanted to send my child to. And so those were factors that I thought about early on when we got married that I don't think my husband even batted an eye about, really. You know, so
Correct. It's
just interesting that, we've been married almost 21 years now, that amount of time, and it still kind of falls primarily on the woman, it seems, to make the adjustment in order for the benefit of the household.
It is, and unfortunately, that has been the mentality for so long. Even when women really entered the workforce after World War II and played a large role in the workforce during the war, and even going back before that, if we would go back to World War I and, you know, the previous in the Civil War, many women were the nurses and the doctors that, you know, cared for the injured soldiers, and they were given stipends for that. So that shows the early parts of women have a contribution to the economic workforce of this country. But the dichotomy is still there, and it is still very strong. And I can say it from my personal experience. I've had a manager tell me, because my wife's a nurse, and she works those 12, 13, 15-hour shifts like she did on Monday, and I am home with the kids. I pick them up. I drop them off at daycare in the morning. I pick them up from school. And I had a manager tell me that, Paul, shouldn't your wife do that? And I immediately froze.
No.
Because it was so offensive. And I had to realize that, you know, this person that was telling me this was coming from an era where that's just his thought process and belief. And it's sad because it's not until now, and his youngest daughter actually graduated high school a few years after me. So, you know, he's in my parents' age range, but it's sad because that's the way he viewed things, and it wasn't until after his kids graduated from college until his wife was able to go back to nursing school and actually have a career for herself, which is totally unfair to me. So
I'm just curious, how did you respond?
I told him that I leave my hours where I left at 4 p.m. every day. No more trading, anything to do, I would leave. On the opposite end, I would sometimes get there at 6:30, 6 a.m. in the morning, you know, sometimes. So I was there to do all the operational stuff that I need to do. And I told him that, you know, this is the way that my family structure is set up. Is two household income. My wife has a career, not a job. It's not a hobby. It's not something she's doing for fun. This is her career. This is what makes her happy. This is what makes her whole. I have a career, a job, and this is what we do, and this is how it works out for our family unit to move forward and for our family to be happy. So it was a very, very disheartening thing. I won't name the manager's name. I won't name the name of the company. Anyone probably could figure it out if you look at my website and look at my bio. But it was a very, very disheartening thing to really hear and really see that takes place at so many levels in corporate America. And not to switch gears too much, but dealing with all the social unrest, social injustice, and a lot of times I don't like to call it social injustice, but it's not society that has a problem, it's racial injustice. So dealing with a lot of racial injustice, racial inequities, and then the discrimination, whether it's against blacks, whether it's Hispanics, women, LGBTQ communities, when it comes to workplace, those dichotomies are very, very present. And it's going to take us to get past that generation of thought process to where we have managers and directors that are in position that are actually open-minded past 1940, I should say, in a mindset to be able to really move us to a truly, truly equitable workforce and equitable workplace in our country. And I know one of the things that we talked about highlighting in Women's History Month is the contribution that women in the C-suite make to so many corporations. And when you look at just in the investment management industry, in my industry specifically, there are so many women-owned firms that mm-hmm. have outstanding performance and so much better processes than men, their men counterparts. And it's just unfair to the lack of diversity when it comes to that in our corporate boardrooms today.
The other thing that struck me when you were telling me this is how this person was so bold to figure that they could comment on how you run your household.
Correct.
Like it was their business.
Exactly. And so bold enough to comment on it to the point where they thought that I would be in agreement to it, that I, it was. So it lets you know the temperature of what that middle management and that directorship level is across corporate mm-hmm. America. That's what we have to deal with. I know so many companies so many people are raising actions against, social injustice, racial injustice, and all the incomplexities of the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But it really has to take place with dealing with that management level. I mean, all these corporations, they can donate $50 million to all of, HBCUs, do all this that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times you have to just look internally and say, what are the high-end practices of my managers in this submarket? And how are they treating their employees? And really understand that. And in corporations, you don't get a 20-second commercial on CNBC are on Bloomberg TV for doing those internal things, but that's really what needs to be done. So it
mm-hmm.
kind of disappoints me a lot when I see many large corporations that are so excited to say we've given X amount of money to Black Lives Matter movement or X amount of money to equality for women in the boardroom. That's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good on the surface. But what are we doing behind the scenes? What are we doing inside of our companies internally to have those checks and balances in place to make sure that it's really socially and racially equitable.
Right, because I always say you can throw all the dollars you want at something, and are you really, doing what needs to be done? I'll take
correct.
The dollars, but what else are you doing?
Yeah, and those dollars are just tax benefits for them to reduce their tax rate. So it's a benefit for them to do it. It's something they were going to do already. So
right.
It's not a correct.
Yeah.
So
okay,
I digress
Well, I was going to say, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and continue talking about what we're supposed to be talking about today with the economy. But we had to address that, though. So anyway, we are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Networks. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the arc with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. the soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with economist Paul Z. Shelton, and we are talking about what now, Paul?
So we're talking about the economy, the job support, which was very good for getting us off to, a good start for this quarter. And in the first quarter, very positive, getting us off to a good start and maturing us through the rest of this year. So just reading some of the numbers and just breaking it out a little bit more, the labor force participation rate was little change. It was at 61.5% in March. And we define it as all of those individuals that are of working age that are actively looking for employment. This does not account for discouraged workers who have stepped away from the labor force altogether. So this measure is 1.8 percentage points lower than it was in February of 2020. The unemployment population ratio is at 57.8%, and that is up about 0.2 percentage points over the month, but it's still 3.3% lower than it is in February. So the reason I wanted to point that out is specifically looking at month-over-month change, we're starting to see more people returning. So we were at a point at about October of last year where we got to a place where the amount of new hires were being significantly hampered by those being laid off. And those layoffs were primarily at that time in public education and in the public sector with some government jobs that were seasonal that were starting to be laid off. We're at a point right now where we're seeing measurable growth of people actually returning to the workforce. So I directly correlate this change that we see from February to the month of March as a result of the vaccine really getting into place. People are really, really stepping up, taking the vaccine. I know here locally, the age has been reduced for those 16 years of age and above, I believe, that are able to get the vaccine. That's given a lot of people a lot more confidence to be able to get out and work, be able to return to work. It's given businesses the confidence to be able to reopen their doors and be able to receive some normalcy in their lives. Now, I will caution that we are still dealing with the virus. There's been spikes of the virus, and things continue to be prudent when it comes to interacting, but we are trending in the right direction. In addition to this directional trend that we're seeing right now, we also have the third round of economic stimulus payments that are hitting bank accounts and people are receiving checks as of now. So we know in the middle of March, those checks start to be received. So $1,400 for all those Americans that qualify for the stimulus payment. This is an additional roughly $3 trillion worth of liquidity that's being pumped into our economy right now. We're going to start to see a very positive result from all of this liquidity in our economy in the very near term and short term with continuations of this job growth and more positive business metrics, but there will be a price tag to pay for this liquidity.
So what I wanted to ask you about is there a correlation, is an ebb and flow with the economy depending on the rise and fall of the COVID infection levels?
So when you look at, there was something that was very, very peculiar that took place right when COVID hit that you never typically see at all. And every economic textbook would tell you that it would never happen. And there was, you know, such a divergence from anything that was true. So typically the stock market is a forward-looking indicator as to where the economy is expected to be in the future. When the coronavirus first came on our shores, we saw a large decrease, or I should say a large increase in amount of unemployment. Many people were laid off and people were forced to stay home all across the country. That significantly changed our landscape, but at the same time, After the initial, you know, drop of about 35%, the stock market rebounded very quickly. And we continued to see people lose jobs as the market was gaining. This is something that you will typically never see. So there was a significant disconnect between the economic market and the stock market at that time. One of the things that I had said over the last year is that I truly believe that we're going to see a righting of the ship. They have to merge and come back to correlation one way or the other. Either the economic market is going to rise to meet the stock market, or the stock market is going to drop to meet the economic market where it was. And what we have seen, based on economic stimulus and all the liquidity that has been pumped into the market, is that the economic market has slowly risen and is coming up to meet what the stock market is as of right now. So they're becoming to be more so highly correlated and behaving in tandem as they should and as they historically have in the past, based on all measures of economic history. So where we currently are right now, we're continuing to see new highs in the S&P 500, new highs in some of the other indices in the Russell 2000 and the small cap index as well. And as we're continuing to see these new highs, we're seeing that the unemployment figures are beginning to drop, meaning employment is rising, to meet the spot market and to support what the spot market is. So we are seeing that correlation become true as it typically is historically and like it was not at the onset of the pandemic.
I was just curious about that because I know, especially, I guess, here in Florida, the uptick was expected from the spring break, and I was just curious in terms of the impact of something like that. And then also, I guess, we're seeing people kind of get back out there with the supply of a vaccine being, you know, infiltrating more and more into the system. And the younger people being able to take advantage of that too. But I guess at the same time, one of the things I looked at is, I think I saw what, like, one of the vaccines was supposed to be effective for only maybe about 6 months. And I guess what my concern is with people maybe kind of going back into the economy and opening up and everything, that we might be making ourselves vulnerable again to some new infections. And I know there are mutated infections as well. And so I just was kind of curious about the impact of that type of those type of things with the economy.
That's very good. And I think it's one thing that we should understand and that everyone should fully digest is the fact that a vaccine is designed to satisfy what has happened in the past, essentially, and to try to prevent things from happening in the future. So the coronavirus vaccine, just like the flu vaccine, the measles, rubella, MMR, all the other things that have come out in the past, have been created to deal with the response of a certain virus or disease or anything that is out there. So even though we have a vaccine for COVID-19, that does not mean you cannot catch COVID-19. That does not mean that you could not be an active carrier of COVID-19 as well. It is still very new. It's still very young. There is still a lot of medical research and technology that needs to be reviewed in order for us to move forward with it. But I am a firm believer that the COVID vaccine right now is voluntary. But over the next several years, I believe that it will be something that will be highly encouraged. And it may become a requirement, just like when kids are going to school and they have to get their vaccinations. It may be in line with those vaccinations as well. So there is a fear that we could possibly see a resurgence. We could see additional waves of COVID-19 that can cause places to close and cause different businesses to suffer. And I think, you know, where economic stimulus or where future stimulus should be in place, if there is any future stimulus, is really focusing on those small businesses that may be hit with such situations. All right, let's say we're a year from now. The economy is back open to full steam. We've reached herd immunity in the COVID-19, but for whatever reason, we may see a bad flu season, and that may lead to a combination of a mutation in the flu virus as well as the COVID-19 virus. And there may be a small law firm that has, you know, 10 employees. Three of those employees, you know, catch COVID-19, mm-hmm. and it's prudent and wise for them to close at that time. I believe that that would cause a significant, you know, financial burden on that particular law firm. It could. Think about it. If it's a restaurant that, you know, is required to serve their patients in store and they don't do any catering like that to make up for any income, but if they have, you know, patrons that they can't bring into the store to serve, you know, and they have to close, just that one particular business is closed while all their peers are open, that can really, really cause a bad scenario for that particular company. So I think that, you know, any future stimulus should be catered in that mindset to be able to bridge the gap for those companies that may fall on hard times in that perspective.
Okay. I wanted to ask you also about the other things that are occurring now with I guess, what do you anticipate happening with the right now the evictions are still, there's still, I guess, a hold on the evictions, but when that's removed, what do you anticipate will happen when that restriction on evictions is removed? And we are also dealing with increase in things like higher gas prices, higher food prices, and higher home prices.
And that could be it can become a very stressful situation for many individuals. So when those moratoriums do lift, you will have a lot of people that may not be able to pay those mortgages or pay that rent. You know, those landlords, those mortgage companies out there, they will, you know, go ahead and pursue foreclosure and evictions at that time. So it is a scary proposition to think about, because not everyone has fully recovered. We still have approximately 9.7 million people that are unemployed that are actively looking for work. Right now, you have several people that are underemployed, and then what I fear is, out of that 9.7 million people that are left, a good 20% of that potentially may be structurally unemployed for the long term. So you think about that small subgroup, which isn't small, but those are people that have mortgages, that have rent, that live in, you know, houses next to us and apartments next to us. And if they're unable to make those payments, if they are evicted, how does that move for the overall economy just with that small sliver? Does that put us in a standpoint where we may see somewhat of a repeat of the Great Recession, at least when it comes to fallout from the real estate standpoint? So that's something that Washington is definitely going to have to keep an eye on.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask you how you've seen, investments change in the wake of COVID. Are people, changing their preference in terms of where they put their money and who's been benefiting and who's been suffering? So we're going to talk about that when we come back. The number is 516-387-1944. If you have questions for Paul, we are here with Paul Z. Shelton. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, welcome back to G's Power Hour. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. The number is 516-387-1944. If you have questions of Paul V. Shelton, he is our economist today. And so what I was curious about is how maybe investors have changed in terms of where they're directing their funds. And, you know, with first-time investors that may be considering getting into the market, how the pandemic has affected these changes?
I would say that you kind of hit it on the point there, kind of with the first-time investors. Are, if I could broaden it out a little bit more, I would say the more novice investor, not just first-time investor, versus the more seasoned investor or accredited investor, there has been a shift. More of the accredited, more of the seasoned investors are continuing to invest as they normally have in the past. They're still maintaining a diversified portfolio. They have not changed some of the fads that we've seen recently when it comes to GameStop, when it comes to, you know, the Reddit investors and things of that nature. So they've maintained that disciplined approach, and it's working for them. It continues to fall in line with their overall asset allocation. It continues to fall in line with their financial goals and what they want to do with their estate planning going forward. Where we have seen a large surge is from some of those less educated or newer investors, and that doesn't mean that they're 19, 20 years old. They could be older than that, but many of them that do not have a lot of education around the stock market have chased what they saw in the evening news. And for some people, it has worked out okay, but for most people, it has not worked out okay. Many people are still sitting in losses in, with GameStop, sitting in losses with other, you know, stocks out there, with Tesla. Many people bought Tesla at the very top, and they are fearful to sell. But what could happen, and like we were speaking on in the previous segment, is that there's been a large correlation between economic stimulus and the rise in the stock market. Many people that receive the stimulus checks were receiving unemployment income at the same time and taking all that money since they were home and they were day trading and learning how to buy stocks and just buy stocks. And they were winning because the stock market was going up because people were pushing money into the market. That's not how the market works from an economic standpoint. And I spoke about that when I talked about the disconnect between the stock market and the economic market. So many of those individuals that were investing early on and had the preference of investing differently and didn't have the education on fully investing into a portfolio that's really going to suit their needs may be in a situation when those moratoriums come down on those evictions where they will have to start selling some of those stocks that they have gains in and start possibly realizing losses on other stocks because they need to sell it to make money to pay for moving expenses, to try to pay the rent, to try to do other things of that nature. And what many investors fail to understand is when you're seeing these success stories of this person that may have made $1 million on this one trade or here and there, what you don't see is their tax return from that result. Uncle Sam is going to take a fair portion of that. You're going to be taxed on it, and it's going to – a lot of times people go out and they spend that money, and then taxes come around, and it's just like when, you know, you hear about the celebrities that are squandered away money or the people who've won the lottery only to be bankrupt, you know, 5 years later. It's a very, very serious situation in that standpoint. So I've seen a lot of that, and more so those – younger investors in that group, I should say, are the less educated. And I don't want to say less educated. That's not the proper term. But those that have the least amount of experience are typically just jumping into the names that they hear their neighbors talking about. And that's not a very prudent way of investing. I advise anyone, everyone, not to do that.
So I wanted to ask then about penalties for withdrawing funds from these accounts and how that may differ for someone that's younger versus someone who's retirement age. Can you talk about that?
Yes, definitely. So we're all broken up into different tax brackets based on our economic status, our wealth, and the income that we have for that particular year. But that does normalize when you do have that significant windfall. So let's take if someone made $1 million just on this particular stock trade or whatever they were doing, when it comes time to realize that gain, they take it from an unrealized gain to a realized gain, and if you trade in that, that's going to be recorded, and that's going to be filed on your taxes for that given year. So if you made $1 million on that gain and your taxes on that are at the top tax bracket and you have to pay, let's just say 40% of that, roughly, let's just say off the top of our head, that's $400,000 that you're going to have to pay in taxes for that particular year. Now, the problem with that is most people, when they pull that, when they're day trading, buying and selling back and forth, if they made that $1 million in profit, they're taking it and trying to reflip it and move it somewhere else and make more money here and there, and it's not always working out. So that $390,000 or $400,000 that you may have in a tax liability for that particular year, you may not necessarily have all of that liquid in your account to pay that. That may still be locked up in capital gains or losses in another security that you roll those funds over to. So it becomes more so of a snowball effect, and it can really be damaging for many individuals, especially if they're doing this in a taxable account. Now, there's three buckets that I like people to focus on: your taxable account, your tax deferred, which is your IRAs or traditional 401k, and your tax-free money, which is your Roth IRA. Now, for most people, they did not employ a Roth IRA to incur all these large gains. If they had done so, then they can wait and have tax-free growth on that in the future, and then they don't have to worry about that huge tax penalty. But for many individuals that are doing this in just a regular taxable account, it's not an IRA or a traditional Roth, they're going to bear all of these tax consequences right now. That can be very surprising for someone that's 21 years old. It can be very crucial for someone that's 60 years old and may still be looking for another job as well. So it's a very scary situation. It's not as easy, clear cut and dry. One of the things I try to do as a firm, and we do with all of our clients, is tax loss harvesting. And it's a way that you can mitigate your taxes throughout the year when you're purchasing and selling your securities and when you're trading, so that you don't have to have these large windfall gains like this and from a tax penalty standpoint. And there's a few different strategies, that wealth managers are able to employ to make sure that this isn't the case. So for all those that are out there listening, day trading is fun. It's exciting to watch YouTube and hear about all the people that are making $1 million their first day of trading. But understand there are some consequences out there, and I advise everyone to speak with a financial advisor to really, truly understand what your true liabilities, the tax penalties, will be when it comes time to render unto Caesar what Caesar's.
Now, I haven't really done much with investing or whatever, but one of the things that I wanted to ask about that I was looking at is when I started looking at requirements for this, that, and the other was, brokerages needing access to your account for you to transfer funds over. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, do you think it's a good idea maybe to get a separate bank account that for specifically for the buying and selling of stocks?
Not necessarily. It's not a requirement. Most of the broker-dealers out there, most of the custodians out there, operate your funds. If you have an account, an investment account with them, you essentially do have a separate bank account. So all the cash that is in your account is either held in a money market fund or it could be held in the FDIC fund that is attached to a bank that is attached to that brokerage firm. So you personally, you'll have that access or at least that protection from that standpoint. It could be just maybe a personal preference. Most accounts do allow you, most taxable accounts do allow you the ability to write. I know for my clients and my custody at TD Ameritrade and Schwab, they are able to have accessibility by writing checks from their accounts directly for those taxable accounts. So it can be treated as the same properties, I should say, as a traditional bank account, although I advise them not to use it that way because you don't want to use your retirement or your investments as your operating expense. So I advise them only write those checks for those large purchases or those things that are truly, truly something that are not coming from your operating budget. So it's a I guess it'll be just a matter of personal preference.
Okay. The other thing that just hit me that I wanted to ask you about, you were talking earlier about people that were investing and making all of this money and stuff like that and then having to end up, you know, paying penalties and taxes and stuff. Is there any way to set it up where profits could go to a tax-deferred account or something like an IRA or, you know, anything else other than just your regular checking account?
Yeah, so I would say the best thing to do, if you're going to do a lot of speculative trading like that, is to definitely do it inside of an IRA. So those are the tax-deferred vehicles. And that way you won't have to be hit with that tax burden immediately. But that's one of the things that's not shared with you. So if you go on to like Robinhood or all these different apps that are out there, they'll just say open up an account. It doesn't tell you, it's not giving you that full depiction of this is an IRA and this is how the IRA works and these are tax advantages are of using this investment vehicle versus another one, type of account versus another type of account. So I suggest that if you're going to be speculative and you're going to really do that, the best is in a Roth IRA. So, you know, you can have that tax-free growth on there. But doing it in an IRA is definitely much better, whether it's traditional or Roth, is much better than doing it in a taxable account. Now, one of the things that I think is evident is in the next 10, 20, 30 years and going forward, our marginal tax rates for this country will be higher than they have been over the last 30 years. Ebb and flow, you know, when Democrats in and when Republicans are in control, you're going to see higher and lower. But in order for us to truly absorb all of this economic stimulus and this trillions of dollars that's in our economy right now, taxes have to be higher in order to pay for it. And if taxes aren't higher, you know, that means that we'll just have to, you know, fall on our knees and plead to China to bail us out. And we don't want to do that. So in order for us to pay for it ourselves, we have to increase taxes. And unfortunately, an increase in taxes could come very well at a time where we see some moderate to possibly significant increase in inflation in our economy for people that are looking to retire in the next 10 to 15 years or so. So I've been advising many people that if you do have that 401k or that traditional IRA, this could be very well the best time to start thinking about doing a Roth conversion, converting those assets that are tax deferred to tax-free assets so that when we go to retirement time, we are able to pull out without having to pay a significant amount of taxes during retirement.
I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you about accounts that have been set up for kids that maybe would have gone to college, but a lot of things have changed because of the pandemic. What happens with those particular funds? I think it's a 529. That's one of the funds that's set up for college students. What if, let's say, a student decides either not to go to college because of what's going on and maybe trying to stick closer to home and maybe trying to get a job and work, or maybe instead of just not going to college right away, going to college a little bit later, can they put that off, and is there a penalty for not just making transition from high school directly into college?
So there are some particular rules with that, and there could be some changes that could come in the future. So historically, with the Coverdale, which is with the 529 plan, you were not able to shift around those assets and those beneficiaries for that. It was defined for that child, and that's where it stays. With the ESA, which is the Educational Savings Account, it had a little bit more flexibility. You would be able to, I should say, bequeath those assets to another sibling. So if mom and dad has four kids and, you know, they realize the first child may have gotten a scholarship and these funds are no longer needed, that can roll down to, you know, the child number two, three, and so on. Another thing that I would say, in addition to just considering those, the Coverdale or the 529 plan, which they could have some limitations, so there is income limitations there could be income limitations, and there could be, you know, contribution limitations as well. So instead of, you know, coming up against those battles, always look towards potentially a Roth IRA. Roth IRA encumbers exactly the same thing that you would want to do with the 529 plan and with an ESA account. The only difference is there's no contribution limit. There is an income limit. If you make too much money, you can't participate on the surface in a Roth IRA, but you can do a backdoor Roth IRA. There's another way that you can fund a Roth account. But I would say the Roth IRA gives you the most flexibility, because if that child decides not to go to college, and I hear this a lot when I speak with families who sit down and do financial plans with them, you know, parents realize that, hey, our one child is a brainiac, they really do really well. This other child, we just need to find a trade for them, because we can't imagine them doing something that's going to, you know, it's going to be dangerous to put this one into society without a trade skill. So parents realize that. And with that realization, that Roth IRA really comes in handy, because if something does change and that child decides to go to college, you can pull out of that Roth IRA all the contributions that you put into it without any tax penalty and without any early withdrawal penalty. All those tax-free gains at retirement can come out free as well, and it's not locked into one particular child. It can go for either one of your kids, or it can go for a niece or nephew, or you can use it, you know, anywhere else. So those funds are available for that when it comes to a Roth IRA. I always think that's a better option. Nothing against the 529 or the Coverdale ESA account, but it's just another option that gives you a lot more flexibility if you're able to swing it with the income restriction.
Okay. So over the next month, what kind of things do you anticipate happening with our economy? Especially, I guess I wanted to talk about some of the dynamics that are changing between our new administration and some of the world leaders right now, and what kind of impact that may have.
Yeah, so I think that that is something to definitely keep an eye on, especially from an economic standpoint. Our communications with the Middle East, our communications with China will definitely continue to play out. I know our initial conversation with China last month did not go as one would want it to have gone, but it was kind of more so expected that it would not mature as quickly. You know, it is a relationship that has to be built. Whenever you change presidential regimes, whenever you change the White House or Congress, there's new relationships that have to be built. There's new promises that are made that have to be carried out, and it takes some time. So, you know, we'll be focusing on that. I think one of the more immediate things that I'll be looking at as well is how that plays out in the energy market. We have seen a somewhat of an increase in crude oil, and that has led to higher gas prices. And into those summer months where people are potentially going to be on the road traveling again. I live close to the airport. I hear more airplanes in the air now than I have before. And potentially we may be having some cruise ships that could be setting sail soon. So there's going to be a draw and a demand for more energy and more energy assets and things of that nature. So I'm really looking at that potentially being a growth catalyst, you know, for our economy over the next 3 or 6 months.
Okay. And I know I'm bouncing around, but I want to go back a little bit to the, I guess you could say, novice investors. And I was thinking also, too, about what you were talking about, some of the platforms to do trading in. Like I think you mentioned, I was actually looking, and there are, I guess, websites that kind of compare some of them. And one of the ones that you were talking about, there was that it was good for novice investors. However, it did not have, let's say, tools such as research platforms, you know, in mixed in. So to give, I guess, the novice investor some insight in terms of what they're investing in and how it compares and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, so on and so forth. Is that necessary? Is that a requirement for a good trading platform to have?
I think so. I think that education and research is paramount to making any investment decision. You know, being able, you may not fully be able to understand everything that you're getting and all the research that you're receiving, but having the ability to have access to it is something that is essential. And I think no investor should make a decision without having access, you know, to solid information, solid research. You know, I liken that to the individual that wakes up in the morning and does not turn on the lights in the bathroom. There's no window, there's no lights or anything. They just reach in the cabinet, they find the toothbrush, and then they just find a tube. They don't know if it's toothpaste or it could be A&B ointment. They just put it on there and put it in their mouth and brush. You wouldn't do that. You'll go in the bathroom, you'll make sure the light's on, you'll make sure you have toothpaste in your toothbrush before you commence brushing your teeth. So the same should be true when you're dealing with your money, dealing with your finances. You shouldn't go and just buy and sell something because you think this is what it is. A lot of people don't understand Bitcoin. A lot of people don't understand how the cryptocurrencies work. A lot of people don't understand how inverse ETFs work and how they really don't track the market over a long term, but they only design to track the market over a 24-hour period. So we see a lot of people that lose money in reference to that, because they don't have that education. And I believe that education is very key. And I think having a research platform is key. And I would say to all the investors out there, whenever you're hiring a custodian or a financial advisor, understand when are those times where you can and cannot trade. I know some of those robo-advisors block trading, restricted trading for many of their clients. With everything was going on with GameStop, so that caused people to lose a lot of money, and that's not fun at all.
Thank you, Paul, for being on with us today, and we'll catch you hopefully next month, and really appreciate all the information, especially, like I said, for us novices. You know, we're still trying to learn here, so. You know, and you can be a novice at any age.
That's what I'm here for.
Put that out there.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, learning is key until, you know, your whole life.
Yeah. Thank you all also for listening. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good. Network. Be well, be safe, be blessed. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right.